Hello and welcome to Plattwoods Church. My name is Evie Martin. I'm the lead pastor here. It is good to be in worship together with you today. Before we get started, I want to share a really special celebration. If you've been with us since Christmas, you know that on Christmas Eve, we took up our close to home Christmas Eve offering. And 100% of that offering is given away to help people in our community who are displaced from their homes, refugees coming from other places, or people who are home insecure right here in our own community. And I just wanted to share that offering total, a reflection of your generosity here in this community. We collected on that night $74,253.03. So just take a moment, clap wherever you are. This is a wonderful celebration of the impact that Plattwoods Church can have in our neighborhoods, in our communities in 2022. So thank you for your generosity. In 2015, Disney Pixar released a really amazing movie called Inside Out. If you're in the phase of life where you've only seen animated films for the better part of a decade, you've probably seen it. If you haven't seen it, you should. The movie takes us inside the mind of a girl named Riley, but Riley is not the main character. Her emotions are. So along the way, we get to know joy, sadness, fear, anger, and disgust. Psychologists for a long time have identified these five as our core emotions from which all others are born. Although now some would argue that there are really only four, that disgust actually falls under anger. But the movie explores how these emotions drive us and shape our behavior and our memories. It's a delightful and thoughtful hour and a half of entertainment. But as we look at those five or four characters, joy, sadness, fear, anger, and disgust, do you notice that the majority of them we might classify as negative emotions? Only joy is a core emotion that we cast in a positive light. Now, emotions themselves are not really positive or negative, but the ways that we allow them to manifest can affect our well-being over time. We look at that list, and none of us wants to dwell for long periods of time in anger or in fear or in sadness. They're always there. They are a part of how we experience the world, and we become wiser when we understand them. But only joy stands out as a place that we could spend endless amounts of time and never grow weary. This is important to note because as life comes at us, we naturally react to it emotionally. And statistically speaking, joy stands the smallest chance of winning out over those other three combined. This says to me that if joy is something we want to possess or be known for in our lives, it's something we must consciously and consistently work to cultivate. Our natural state of being may not, over time, default to joy. So this series is intended to help us do some of that cultivating work. Where is the joy? Particularly in the reality of life that is hard, where struggle and suffering are real every day, where anger is an easy and prevalent response. Everything in the world seems frightening right now, and we as a human race are filled with sadness over all that we have lost and how we have treated one another. In the pie pieces of our lives, those three seem overwhelming, but there is still and always that fourth piece, joy. Is always there. Last week, we defined joy as a spiritual radiance that comes from a deep sense of well-being, regardless of our circumstances. It's not a plastic happiness, but more like a reservoir filled with the truth that we are well in all things because God is near. We can draw from this reservoir then when our circumstances are harsh and dry, and we can fill it up when they are verdant and calm. Joy is implanted within us by God from the moment we are created. It is at our core. And it is what Jesus seeks to draw out of us again and again, as he says in John 10:10, "I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." We began the series asking, where is the joy in the daily grind of work and stress? And today we dive into another New Year hot topic, health. If you were to guess at a list of the top New Year's resolutions in America every year, what do you think they would be? If you guessed something like exercise more, eat healthier, lose weight, you'd be absolutely right. These notions of physical health top the charts year after year after year, and capitalism does not miss this opportunity. Gyms offer fantastic membership deals. Facebook ads flood our scrolling with healthy recipes, abs and 30-day workouts, dry January plans, Whole 30 plans. Friends band together to exercise and hold each other accountable. Exercise equipment goes on sale. Everything around us in the world as the calendar turns over point toward a vision of health and fitness and wellness. And at the same time, we're all resolving to do better in our physical health, our mental health can be working against us. In the Northern Hemisphere, this is the time of year when seasonal affective disorder kicks into high gear. Sadness naturally takes the lead in human emotions as days are still short. We're confined more indoors, and we come down from what may have been an emotional high over the Christmas holidays. Depression, both short-term and chronic, are aggravated at higher levels this time of year. Questions of health, physical and mental, are all around us in January, arguably more than any other time of the year. There's a certain irony here in asking the question of where is the joy in health? Because from the surface, it would seem that we are seeking joy by pursuing health. We want our bodies and minds to be in sync. We want to feel good. We want to look good and perform well, and perhaps then that will make us happier. And yet, I think there's a good reason these grand ambitions to diet or work out more or get stronger or spend 30 minutes a day in meditation right off the bat fizzle out quickly for the majority of people. We think we will find joy quickly, but instead we come up against obstacles to joy in our pursuit of health. The first of those obstacles is a whole barrage of toxic messaging. The picture of health is marketed to us, not generated by us. So we have it ingrained into us from young ages, even what a healthy body is supposed to look like, what it is supposed to be able to do, what kinds of food are good for it, which ones are not, how we should be able to achieve this picture of health. Anything about us, then, that doesn't align with that cultural narrative of health makes us feel bad about ourselves or discouraged that we will never be healthy in the way the world says we should be healthy. We're sabotaged almost from the start by this toxic messaging. We know this just from the statistics and stories around young people and body image. It is so devastating to me to see and hear young women hating their own bodies because someone, the internet, YouTube, medical professionals even, whoever, has convinced them that their physical existence in this world is something other than absolutely beautiful and miraculous. The same is true for young men, and even more so for non-binary or transgendered individuals simply trying to figure out who they are in their bodies. We are socialized to self-deprecate and denigrate. And it's not just young people. We're all affected by this. We all struggle to claim the beauty and goodness of our physical bodies. We did an entire sermon series last January called Embody to try to speak to this struggle from a biblical perspective. You can always go back and check that out again in our sermon archives online if you'd like to hear that encouragement, if you need that in your life. Somehow, the wider cultural messaging around health leads us into that similar struggle to be kinder and more loving toward our bodies. And then, while we've made great strides with regard to negative messaging around mental health in our culture, there are still roadblocks for people battling anxiety and depression. It is still exceedingly difficult to reach out and get the help that is needed because of that fear of how others will see you, maybe as unhealthy. The road to good mental health is lit up with billboards of toxic messages, too. Along those lines, excited to tell you that Plattwoods Church is hosting a third event in our Courageous Conversations series at the end of this sermon series. This one is around the topic of depression and faith. It's something we need to talk about more from a faith perspective. The church is often silent on things like anxiety and depression and mental health. And yet so many of us in our congregations struggle with these things. So you'll be hearing more details about that soon, but hold the evening of Sunday, February 6th open. It will be a meaningful conversation for us all. A second and very related obstacle to finding joy in health is comparison. You've probably heard the very apt saying, comparison is the thief of joy. We can feel the truth of that in our lives in so many ways. For all of its benefits, social media has ruined our lives in this way, I think, when we are in a constant state of comparing our lives, our homes, our kids, our jobs, our food, our vacations, our experiences with other people's, we find ourselves feeling fairly joyless, dissatisfied with our lives and ourselves. Comparison has stolen our joy. And this is absolutely true in our pictures of health. When we're looking around at how other people are healthy or how we perceive them to be healthy, both in body and in mind, we will never be satisfied with the ways that we are healthy or realistic about the ways we'd like to be healthier. I may be the actual worst about this. I have a fitness app through my health insurance company. And on a pretty regular basis, they'll have these virtual fitness challenges that you can sign up for with other app users all across the country. And it's meant for encouragement and accountability because we do these challenges together, virtually. So in the fall, I did a daily step challenge with three other people who I've never met, never will. We were a team together, and our cumulative total of steps was what would determine the score at the end. It's supposed to be collaborative. Well, it completely backfired for me because right out of the gate, I was so proud of my 7,000 steps per day contribution until I saw George and Marilyn from Vermont logging 12,000 plus steps a day, day after day after day. Comparing my totals with theirs completely demoralized me to the point that I sort of quit trying. Needless to say, our team did not win the challenge. George and Marilyn from Vermont will avoid me like the plague on the app now, I'm sure. This may say more about my own personality flaws and motivators, but it also points to the obstacle of comparison when we're seeking joy in health. When we think we're supposed to be healthy in the same ways other people are healthy, we're missing the mark, and it won't benefit anyone. A third obstacle to our joy in health is our tendency to binge. We've all done it. We'll dive headlong into something, fully immerse in it, maybe oversaturate ourselves and then fizzle out quickly. Our pursuit of a quick fix or immediate results or satisfaction leaves us wanting pretty quickly. We all know what binging is. We've all done it with television, right? In the year 2022, this calendar year, how many of you have already sat down and watched an entire season of something on Netflix? We can't help but consume it all at once, maybe in a weekend, maybe even in a day. That's nuts, right? Our younger selves wouldn't believe us if we told them that this would be possible. But the same applies to our health lives. Think about exercise trends or fads you may have dived into, purchasing the right clothes and gear and accoutrement, all of which now reside in a corner of your basement or have long since found their way to a swap and sell. I'm currently in the middle of 30 days of yoga with Adrian on YouTube. Who wouldn't want to be great at yoga in just 30 days? I'm on day 9. You'll note that it is the 16th day of January. You can do the math there. I suspect if I stick with Adrian, it may be more like 90 days, not 30, but we'll see how it goes. There can be benefits to some immediate and intense actions in exercise or diet or mental well-being. Maybe we just need a jump start. But for the most part, our tendency toward quick fixes doesn't pan out for us. Because lasting health isn't an achievement, it's an ongoing way of life. We become disappointed when we can't establish or accomplish it quickly. For all the obstacles there are around finding a deep reservoir of joy in our relationship to our health, there is in fact much hope. Our bodies, our minds, are our home. They are where we live our entire lives. So they absolutely should be a place where we find deep well-being and experience joy. Our faith and our scripture give us a foundation that can stand up against these obstacles we've named. While we don't necessarily find prescribed workouts or a week's worth of healthy meal plans written out for us in the Bible, we do see the celebration of health and wellness, the value and gift of our minds and bodies to God. There's a verse in the Psalms that I sing as a lullaby to my kids some nights. I want to make sure they know it at the core of their being, their whole life long. "For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well." These words center us in God's creative work. They echo back to the creation story where God made humans and called them very good. There is no definition or description here of what a good body or a good mind or a healthy person is. We are all creations, equally and wonderfully born out of God's imagination. Our health and our pursuit of it should be a reflection of this love and care that God has for what God has made. Later in the New Testament, of course, we see Jesus busy in so many stories at the work of healing. His concern and care for people includes the health of their bodies, restoring them to working condition that allows them not to be some image of perfect, but to be in right relationship with themselves and with others. He didn't heal every sick person he encountered, but the ones he did were all restored in their bodies, but also to their communities. For Jesus, health seemed to be about more than just the body, but a broader wellness of the whole person. Later writings in Romans remind followers of Jesus the sacred place their bodies occupy for God. So, brothers and sisters, because of God's mercies, I encourage you to present your bodies as a living sacrifice that is holy and pleasing to God. Don't be conformed to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds so that you can figure out what God's will is, what is good and pleasing and mature. This is Paul writing to the early church in Rome, so keep in mind there are all kinds of sacrifices happening all the time at all these various temples of the Roman gods. People living in Rome are surrounded by a culture of sacrifice, mostly animals, but probably some human as well. And into that context, Paul is telling these early Christians to think of their bodies as sacrifices that keep on living. That it's not what the bodies look like, whether they're perfect or not, or how well they function that matters. It's what they do, how they live, that is pleasing to God. He goes on to tell them not to think like the world thinks about these things. It's as if he's saying, God isn't interested in dead things laid out on an altar. Rather, God is interested in how your body, your whole self, is an offering that is active in the world. Serving others, loving others, caring for others, dismantling injustice, and seeking God's will. Whatever it takes for your body to do that, maybe that's our new measure of health. I think these biblical perspectives set us on a path to overcome the obstacles to joy that we've named when it comes to our health. For every obstacle, there's an option to act or think differently which begins to fill that reservoir of joy, even in our health. For the obstacle of toxic messaging, we have the opportunity to define our own health. Rather than taking our cues from media and advertisers about a kind of health that seems unattainable for everyone, we look to the biblical idea of wholeness. Instead of worrying about what our bodies look like, can we ask instead what we want our bodies to be able to do in service to God and others? And what would we need to do to get to that state of physical and mental health? Exercise and good eating, for some perhaps. Rest and cultivating a compassion for others, yes, probably for all of us. Attention to our passions and God's nudges in our lives. All of these things together bring us closer to the wholeness God desires for us to live our abundant and joyful lives. If wholeness becomes our standard, it will change with us, with age and ability. Sometimes we feel our bodies and minds fail us. Chronic pain, disease, age. But we can still be whole at every point along our journey. It will look very different at each step along the way, and probably none of it will look like what America is trying to sell us. But there is no end in this life to the ways our bodies and minds can be conduits of God's love and grace for others. We can find joy when we redefine what healthy means. Wholeness. For the obstacle of comparison, this one is so hard to combat because we face it every single day, but the alternative action is appreciation. Instead of running the inner monologue of everything that's wrong with ourselves compared to others, can we lean into Psalm 139 and give thanks for everything that is wonderful? I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made, it says. When comparison has stolen our joy, start a new list. Thank your body for what it has done for you today. Appreciate the scars and the stories they tell. Thank your feet for their hard, grueling work. Be grateful for the few extra pounds that are keeping you warm in these cold winter months. For every memory you've lost, give thanks for the ones you still have and the loved ones around you who hold them all safe. Even in the midst of disappointment with your own body and times of illness and pain, maybe all you can find to appreciate is the breath that fills your lungs. That's enough. Start there. When you are belittling yourself, stop. Find a mirror, look into it, and appreciate what you see. For you are God's unique creation. You exist as you are because of the divine imagination. Don't let anyone steal that wonder from you. And finally, when we face the obstacle of the binge mentality, we can counter it with practice. Practice sure isn't always fun, but it's the kind of action that breaks us out of old patterns and truly shapes us for something new. We have the capacity to retrain both our bodies and our minds, but it doesn't happen quickly. It happens a little bit at a time through practice. If we think back to the image of the reservoir that we have used to describe joy, we can tease out this metaphor a bit. A quick flash flood over dry topsoil usually doesn't make it down through the ground into the reservoir. It might be a lot of water in a short amount of time, but it doesn't find its way deep into the ground. A slow and steady drip, on the other hand, over time and with consistency, will soak into the dirt and seep down, making its way into the reservoir for a time when more water is needed. Practice, when it comes to our health, is what will fill the reservoir. Find the slow, steady drip. Maybe it's a form of exercise that is realistic for you, on a schedule you can actually maintain. And maybe you even enjoy it rather than dread it. Maybe it's not cutting out foods that you love that are unhealthy, but cutting back in a careful and regular way because you feel better, more whole overall when you do. scientists have learned that just like we can retrain our bodies through exercise and practice, we can also retrain our minds to respond with different emotions. In situations that demand an emotional reaction, our brains will often revert to the ones we have felt most recently or most frequently. So by practicing feelings of gratitude or happiness or wonder, we actually train our minds to revert to those more readily in times when we might have otherwise felt sad or angry or lonely. This concept makes me think of a scripture in Philippians where Paul encourages people how to begin renewing their minds. From now on, brothers and sisters, he says, if anything is excellent and if anything is admirable, focus your thoughts on these things. All that is true, all that is holy, all that is just, and all that is pure, all that is lovely, and all that is worthy of praise. Where does your mind spend its time? Do you often think of lovely things, just things, excellent things? If you spent 30 seconds, twice a day, centering your thoughts on these things that Paul suggests, would it change how you feel about yourself or others? How can we practice in body and in mind things that will bring us deep and lasting joy? If getting healthy or being healthy is part of your desire for 2022, I hope it truly can become a source of joy. We are fearfully and wonderfully made, and God desires wholeness for us, even when we have forgotten that aim. We can't arrive at wholeness quickly, but with practice over this year and in the years to come, our lives can become full in the way that Jesus desires. Will you pray with me? Oh God, creator and life breather, we do not always appreciate what you have done in the very making of us. Forgive when we take your handiwork for granted. In this season of resolution, amidst a culture of comparison and commerce, grant us a new perspective on ourselves, on what it means to be healthy and whole. As we seek joy in our own health, may we find it as we commit our bodies and minds to loving you and serving others. In the name of Jesus Christ, our abundant life. Amen.